First, I'm going to say just a massive, massive thank you for taking your time for the chat today. I know you're probably quite busy and you've obviously got so many things that you could be doing, but just thank you for taking your time to chat to me.
Hey, no problem. It's my pleasure.
The first thing I want to ask is, what first got you into music?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I just had a natural affinity towards it. My father used to sing around the house and play ukulele, and there was always a radio on. So when I was in school, when I first started school, there were all, you know, school choirs and stuff, and I just loved to sing. Any chance I could get, I would sing, and then I picked up, I decided I wanted to play the violin. Well, I really wanted to play the harp, but my parents said, no, it's too expensive and too big, so you can't play that. So then I chose, after we all had to learn the recorder, which is like a song flute, in music class, then they offered you an array of instruments, and I thought, well, violin. So I gravitated towards that, and then I started playing violin. So I think I've always been attracted to music, you know, ever since I first heard it.
I've listened to a lot of your music, and you actually started back in the 70s because you worked with a lot of great artists, including Eric Clapton. So what was that like, say, early in your career? You're working with a man who had already become a legend in his own right.
Yeah, it's how to start big. you know, it was incredible. Before that, you know, when I finally decided to pursue music as my career when I was in Detroit, then I was sitting in this park playing my guitar, and I did a lot back then. I just said, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I remember I had a revelation that I made at Point of Focus after that. And I got in some bands around Detroit, some local bands, a band called Julia. We opened for we opened for David Bowie. And then,
wow.
Yeah, and then Bob Seger's manager heard about us, and he hired us to back up Bob, and I went on tour with him. And then it was Leon Russell. I was a big fan. So the guys that was in Bob Seger's band with, they invited me to move to Oklahoma, believe it or not. There was a big music scene there, and I wanted to work with Leon, so I moved there. And it was through that connection, after working with Leon Russell, and even right before that started, we were invited to join Eric's band. But I already made a commitment to work with Leon because he was one of my big idols. So I worked with him and got personally involved with him, which was kind of a mistake, but it was something that I felt that I wanted to do and that I was compelled to do. And then after that ended, I joined my friends in Clapton's band, and it was like, okay, you go from touring in stinky, like little kind of, you know, motorhomes and what do you call them, estate wagons, to now I'm in Learjets. I mean, it was just insane, you know, with my friends and doing something that I love to do. And we were usually very naughty and got involved in bad behavior. But overall, the experience was something that I'll never forget. I'll always treasure. And working, you know, with Eric, who was so very generous with us. And it's, you know, it's funny, even though I've heard him say in interviews, I read one interview a few years ago, he said, I don't believe in generosity. There's no, I'm like, well, he was very generous to us. And especially, you know, to me, he didn't know me. My friends said, oh, she's really good. She should be in the band, or bring her down to Jamaica and to, you know, to kind of audition me. And he was like, yeah, after 5 days, hey, you want to be in the band? I'm like, what, am I nuts? Of course I want to be in the band. I want to be with my friends. And of course I want to tour with an icon. And it was an incredible experience, just all around, you know, just incredible, playing at giant arenas and, like I said, flying on Learjets and meeting all kinds of amazing other musicians, from Led Zeppelin to Bob Dylan and Van Morrison and, you know, loads of people. It was just an incredible experience.
I think it's going to be easier just to name the people that you haven't seen at the moment. There's such incredible names that you've seen and that you've played with. It's just mad. Also, with Eric Clapton, you co-wrote some songs with him, including Lay Down Sally, which was one of his biggest hits as a solo artist, but what inspired you to start writing with him? How did that conversation come up?
Well, when I first joined the band, one of the guys from Tulsa, Dick Sims, he and I were always writing. You know, we had a band in Tulsa before I started working with Eric, and he and I would do a lot of writing, and I do a lot of writing on my own. But when we were in the studio with Eric, well, first of all, Dick and I wrote a song that was on the first album that I was on with Eric, There's One in Every Crowd, called Hungry. And so Eric knew that I wrote. And as time went on, There's No Reason to Cry album, Eric and I, you know, he would start a song and he asked me, it just kind of happened organically. You know, he started with some chords and I had some ideas for it. And that's just kind of how it started. And by the time it was a Slow Hand album, well, that was about 3 or 4 albums into my work with him. So he already knew, you know, that I wrote good songs. And it just kind of happened organically, you know. And he started Lay Down Sally. We were in the studio at Olympic in London, which was an incredible studio. And he said, hey, Marcy, I want to write a song called Lay Down Sally. So I quickly came up with a melody for that, the chorus melody. And the groove was really different, though. It was more of like a Bo Diddley beat. And I don't know if your listeners know what Bo Diddley is. Are you familiar with that?
I am a little bit familiar, but please don't ask me to explain because I'll probably make a fool myself.
Right. It's more like a bump, 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 bump. It's more like it originated in New Orleans. It's called Second Line. Anyway, so I originally wrote it like that. I just picked up the guitar and started singing the melody, you know, the Lay Down Sally with my guitar. And it just kind of went on from there, but it was changed over the course of the day because we couldn't come up with a verse that sounded good. And yeah, I mean, it was just an organic thing. And I was one lucky, you know, girl to fall into such an incredible experience and opportunity.
Like I said, that song is incredible and it still goes today. And you have covered it yourself.
I have, yes. Many times and in many ways.
Every now and again, I like to just look through music videos. I like to listen to what people have done and stuff I may not have heard before. And one that I recently found out about was that you actually done a song with one of my favourite ever artists, Alice Cooper. And that song I actually got quite hooked on listening to Millie and Billy. I mean, how do you go from working with Eric Clapton to working with Alice?
That, first of all, that was a crazy song, wasn't it? I mean,
I love that song.
It's a great song. You know, Alice, I used to go see him play in Detroit, you know, before I seriously started in music as a career. And I was inspired by him. But, well, when I left Clapton, or should I say the first time, when I moved to L.A. and then I found out I was no longer in the band, I came to L.A., you know, left Tulsa, came to L.A., and through friends, I started doing a lot of session work. And in fact, I did an album on my own with I'm sure you heard of the incredible producer David Foster.
I do like the work of David Foster.
Yeah. And it was through David that I got the gig with Alice, because I did a solo album with David. He produced my album, which never came out, unfortunately. It was on RSO Records, but it never came out. And through David, you know, he just kept calling me to do sessions with loads of people, from Daryl Hall to, well, you know, like Alice and lots of other things. So, you know, I started building up a really good name for myself doing sessions in L.A., and really that's how it happened.
I've also got to mention another person that I believe this was actually your first official single as well, Help Me, which actually featured Robin Gibb. I mean, this is a great musical progression that you've done, going from all these artists. But Robin Gibb, I mean, one of the most gifted songwriters ever. I mean, what was that like?
Oh, well, it was the connection through Stigwood that I met Robin and that he expressed an interest in working with me. And that was on the Times Square movie soundtrack. And RSO, Robert Stigwood Organization, were doing the album. So I met Robin and we were put together to write. I actually came over to London. This was at the time when I was working with Eric still. that was kind of like near the end. But I went over to London and we recorded it and did a video over there, actually. And Robin was, but actually working on the record, no, that was something else. I went over, I went to his house in New York on Long Island to work on a few other things. But yeah, working with Robin was incredible. He was so gifted and so sweet. And incredibly talented. He knew what he wanted, and he worked with the best people. And it was just an incredible pleasure. You know, and it's so easy when you work with people like that. You know, just so easy and natural.
I want to now go on to your solo career, because you actually then went to producing your own albums. You're having your own music out. I mean, what was it like when you actually did get your first solo album released?
What was it like? Well, you know, I was always wanted to do my own records. I mean, I didn't just have the aspiration to be a background singer, but it was a good place to start, you know, to get my feet wet, to get in the music business. And I made my progression up there, and when I had the opportunity to do my own album with it was with Epic Records. I worked with a great producer named John Boylan, who did a lot of stuff from Little River Band to Linda Ronstadt. He was kind of like the king of the California sound, really. And Epic Records put me together with him. So, you know, it was a great experience as well. I was really lucky. When I first started writing the songs, it was with my partner, Richard Feldman, who's from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he and I were, you know, experimenting with different kind of sounds and songs, and we wanted to do something a little bit more alternative, but Epic wanted us to, they got us to do like a real kind of rock, and then got me more into like new wave, and I wasn't as sure about that. I didn't really feel it was in my heart, but you know, sometimes you get signed to big labels and you are coerced. You trust people's opinions and you're coerced and you decide to go along with it. I don't know if it was a mistake or not. I can't say it was, because it's part of what I've done, and I guess that's what it was meant to do. So, you know, there are some songs on the album. We listened to it the other day. We got our old stereo going and, you know, the turntable working, and listened, and there were some songs on there that were pretty good. But it was it was the 80s, you know, it was 1982 and it sounded like it. But I was grateful for the opportunity. And unfortunately, I had the opportunity, I was invited to go on tour with John Cougar Mellencamp, who was big back then, but the label wouldn't let me go. They didn't want to give me tour support. So that didn't really help. Yeah.
That's a bit of a bummer, really. You think that would have been a good idea, really?
You would have thought so, right? But welcome to the music business, where you never know what's going to happen and what's not.
Obviously, since then, you have continued to make music, and especially in regards to your solo albums. But, I mean, what's it been like moving on to, especially like the later albums, like especially Grey Matters? What's it like creating that piece of work compared to your first album?
Completely different, because, well, A, I produced it, you know. I did it all. It's amazing what you can do on a Mac computer, which is what I use. In fact, I'm talking to you from my studio right now, and everything is inside of my computer. I don't have any more, I mean, not a lot of what you call outboard gear, you know, a lot of effects and things like that, except for a mic preamp and some really good microphones. But I created everything in my computer, and it's really rewarding to think, wow, I can do all this at home, where I used to have, you know, the big, huge board that took up a whole room and a 2-inch tape machine. But the benefit to those old days was everything had a nice, warm sound. I think we lose a lot of that with digital recording. But to get back to what it's like, yeah, incredible. I just feel more in control of what I'm doing. And I just had a lot of fun doing it. You know, I really enjoyed the process.
The new album as well, you've had it out for a few months now. You've been recently promoting the song Drag Queen, which played a couple of times. Really do like the song. And if anyone was listening to your music now and say they hadn't listened to you since the 90s or 2000s, how would you describe your style of music today?
I see myself as someone who likes to learn and grow and try different things. In 2000, I did an electronic record called Dancing Madly Sideways. It was on my own independent label, which got some attention. And now this album has kind of gone back to a more modern dance electronic sound. The album I did before this was kind of like a soul, kind of a modern singer-songwriter soul album. So, you know, I bring a lot of my influences to what I do, but this album I happen to just let myself be completely free and not put any limitations on, oh, well, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that. And I just started writing all these kind of dance music, you know, dance electronic songs. So I see myself as very experimental, and that's what this album was about. And it may continue in that vein. I may go, oh, I'm really hungry for something really organic next. Or I might just do something completely different and do art instead. I don't know. I mean, music has changed so much. The music business, it's a completely different animal these days. And now with music, people wanting music for free. It's, you know, I feel sorry for people just starting out because it's hard to earn a living off of it anymore.
I mean, thinking about your music now and listening to your previous work, you do experiment quite a lot. And like you said, you have done some pop stuff. You've done acoustic. But do you feel that helps your writing process if you do take these different genres on?
I suppose so, yeah. It kind of gives me a stretch. You know, it makes me think. It makes me learn. It makes me listen. It makes me grow. And I feel like I'm all about that. I like to try new things. I like to experiment. And then you can discover, you know, oh boy, I really don't know much about that. You know, I really need to learn about this before I actually do it. So yeah, I feel it's good for the soul to try new things. I don't believe in staying completely stagnant. I don't think it really helps. Doesn't help me.
I've got to go on to Shakespeare's Sister because this is still one of the groups that I get told about all the time from people who have listened to the music, know the song Stay, and just so many people still love the group today. But I mean, when you were first getting Shakespeare's Sister together, how did that come about? How did you and Siobhan Fahey first come together?
Well, we were just talking maybe about 5 minutes ago about one of my writing partners named Richard Feldman from Tulsa. He moved out here to L.A., and we worked on my solo album that you mentioned in 1982, the Marcella album. Well, after I finished with Eric and I was doing a lot of session work in L.A. and I did my own album, several years later I was still doing the same thing and writing and more session work. And in 1987, Siobhan and her husband Dave Stewart moved in across the street from Richard. And she was very pregnant, expecting her first child. And Richard called me and said, hey, you know, Dave Stewart just moved in across the street from me. I went and introduced myself. I want you to come over. And she's talking about doing a solo album and maybe you would like to help. And I said, well, yeah, sure. So I went over and met them and met her. And we just started talking. It just kind of happened organically. They were writing, and he invited me to come and write with them one day on the first album. And as I became, you know, he said, you can, you know, I sang, I played, you know, guitar, wrote harmonica, and, you know, whatever I could contribute. And we did a few songs, and then they went back over to London. I think it was right before she was going to have her baby. They went back over to London, and after a while he said, oh, why don't you come over and write some more with us? And so I went over, and we just continued writing, and my sound became more integral to the album. I was still more of a hired hand, you know. I got paid to do my work. I wasn't part of the band until the very end when, you know, once the album came out and my sound was integral to the sound of the band. when we started the second album, I was asked to be a 50% member. So that's how it happened and what it evolved into.
You didn't just become a 50% member. The song that effectively everyone remembers Shakespeare's Sister for is Stay, and that was about 75% your vocals. I mean, when you were writing that song with Dave and with Siobhan, I mean, did you get the feeling that you were basically writing a hit there?
No, not really. We were just writing the whole album, that second album, Hormonally Yours, around this this movie called Cat Women from the Moon. It was a B movie that Dave Stewart found. It was a 1950s B movie, you know, a really badly made sci-fi movie, but it was perfect in that it was, you know, it was so kind of cliched and cheesy, but there were some great scenes in there, and Siobhan and I, we wanted to buy the rights to the movie and superimpose ourselves into it. And every song was inspired by a scene in the movie. And when we were writing that song, my character was singing to one of the Earthlings who I had fallen in love with, and he was going to go back to Earth, so I was asking him to stay. But we didn't have any idea. We would, you know, she'd come over to my studio every day at around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we'd be good little girls and write, you know, every day for a few months. And afterwards, we'd go back to her house and play our songs for everybody. And Chris Thomas, the incredible producer, was there working with Dave on his group, the Spiritual Cowboys band that he had going on in the early 90s. And we played Stay, and Chris was the first one to say, number one smash. And we were... really? Okay. I had no idea. She had no idea. But he was right. And he actually mixed it for us.
Yeah, that song was number one for 8 weeks, and I believe still holds the record for longest number one for a girl group as well.
That's right, in the UK, yeah.
I mean, that is a massive achievement. And still today, that song is covered multiple times. But the one thing I love about it is, I'm sure you've probably seen them, the parodies of the song, especially French and Saunders one, which I think is just hilarious, but so well done as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, those didn't go over too well. Siobhan didn't like them. I don't blame her. I mean, there were certain things in it that she felt were, I guess, you know, not like how she wanted to be portrayed. But, and you know, for me, I mean, it made me look like just some kind of idiot walking along singing with nothing going on. But you know what? It was just, I mean, I think that's the most, you know, ultimate compliment when you get people who are, you know, comedians who are just so part of the whole era, taking the piss, excuse my language, but when you get them, you know, doing a parody of you, I think it's the highest compliment you could possibly have. So I thought it was great. And when I first met Jennifer and also Don, the first thing they said to me, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, are you kidding? Are you kidding? You don't be sorry. I think it was incredible. And I became friends with Jennifer, and I did some work with her on an absolutely fabulous episode, which was fun. Don, I met once. And, you know, they're amazingly funny, just naturally.
And this is the thing, I'm glad that you liked it. I know you're saying that Siobhan didn't, but, I mean, I do see the point. I do see that it's the idea that some people think it is almost like a mictake, almost like an insult to the work they've done. But
yeah.
I think I saw it as it was something fun, and it was more like paying tribute to the work that you did do and showing that if you hadn't done that, this wouldn't exist.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, you know, they're like parasites feeding off of us. You know, we gave them something to parody. So, I mean, it was an opportunity for them. And I think, as I said, I think it's flattering. I mean, some of the things that were done, I didn't think were flattering at all and kind of disrespectful. But, you know, that's what happens. You can't control what people do. And, that's just part of it. You put yourself out there and you subject yourself to all kinds of things. That's part of it.
We mentioned earlier that you had the Grey Matters album just come out last year, but have you been working on new material? Have you already started writing towards a new release or a new album?
Have I started writing on a new album? No, I haven't done anything. In fact, somebody asked me, so it's about time for a new album. You know what? I have not. I've just been mainly concentrating on doing promotion for this album and trying to set up shows and get interest going. And it can be a full-time job and just life, you know, living my life and finding happiness in other ways other than the crazy music business. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do, if I'll do another album. I probably will, but I don't know when. I don't know what it's going to be. But I haven't really felt the need to do that yet. So we'll see.
Are you saying about setting up shows as well? Have you already got some tour dates lined up?
I've got a few shows coming up over here in the States in June. But I don't have anything going on in the UK or anywhere else right now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'd love to come back, though. You know, we'll see how things go. If there's a good reason, other than my love for England and it being my second home, because my husband's British and, you know, I've spent a lot of time over there and lived there for about 6 years off and on. Other than that, if there's a good reason to come over, you know, like a tour booked and other interests, then of course I'd be there tomorrow.
If you got the opportunity to work with anyone in the music industry, who would you choose and why would you choose that person?
Ooh, one person. Oh, God, that's so hard. Because there are some people, like more old school people that I'd like to work with. But I think right now, because he understands old school and modern music and he is just like keeps churning out hits. I think I'd really like to work with Mark Ronson. I love what he did with Amy Winehouse. I really love what he's done with Bruno Mars. He's brought he's got the old school thing going on, but it's still very modern and fresh sounding. And those are my roots. And if I was going to do another album, I think I would like to try to do it with him. But other than that, I would like to work with some great artists like Stevie Wonder. I mean, I love Stevie. So that would probably be my first choice after that, to just work with somebody and sing with someone. That's who I'd like to work with.
Joe, I think that's got to be an award-winning album there. You and Stevie Wonder singing with Mark Ronson producing it.
Okay, sounds good. Book it.
I'll get on to him tomorrow.
All right, then.
Right, Marcella, just thank you so much. This has been so fun. And once again, just thank you. It's just been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you. It was really nice talking to you and a pleasure talking to you as well. Appreciate it.
I've been informed that there is apparently a Christmas album as well that you'd done a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. What I did was every year for years I would do a new Christmas song and I would either write one or do an old standard. And so after about 10 years, I went, well, I'm going to make the Christmas album now. You know, I wrote a new song to put on it. But yeah, For the Holidays, I believe it's called. And yeah, I mean, I have loads of all my Christmas songs over the years on there. And every year, like I said, I write a new one, like I did this year as well. It's fun. It's a lot of fun, I think. I love singing Christmas songs. I think they're beautiful. A lot of them are really, really beautiful. And, you know, I just love singing them. So it's always fun to do that.
Well, like I said, I've ordered my copy. I'm looking forward to it. I'll definitely be listening to that. Well, I'll probably wait until more the holiday season to listen to it more, but I'll definitely be having a listen to that as soon as I can.
Okay, great. Thank you. I hope you like it.
I'm sure I will. But Marcel, thank you very much. Have a good day and goodbye.
All right. Give my love to London.